Welcome to this episode of Fossils and Fiction, a podcast that explores the stories of prehistoric life, most often through the stories we humans tell about it. It's produced by me, Travis Holland, with support from Charles Sturt University. Enjoy. Welcome to this episode of Fossils and Fiction. This is a bit of an unusual episode, as I am on site in the Jameson Valley in the Blue Mountains. I'm at Scenic World, which is a really cool tourist attraction that I used to come to plenty as a kid, but haven't been to for about 30 years. And I was super excited to hear that they have a new attraction. Well, it's been running for about 5 years, called Dinosaur Valley. In this episode, I interview event manager Rachel McCluskey. I walk around the valley, we have footage and photographs of all the dinosaurs. Enjoy.
This is the world's steepest railway.
Gotta have the Jurassic Park music.
Yeah. As you can see, I guess the listeners can't see, but you can see it's a absolutely beautiful location. So it feels pretty special to be able to kind of to work in this environment. It's easy to forget sometimes when you're sitting at your desk kind of in our admin office, and then you step outside and you head down into this like incredible valley, and it's that moment that again you go, oh, we're really lucky.
So we got here by coming down through the Scenic Railway, which is one of the steepest railways in the world. And I think a huge part of sort of the whole attraction of Scenic World is about showing people these environments as undisturbed as possible, you know, allowing people access but keeping the environment safe, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, one of the, I think, special things about Scenic World is that, people come to the Blue Mountains from all over the world, all over the country, and you know, people have various levels of, you know, ability in going out for, you know, a bushwalk or, you know, getting down to the bottom of a waterfall. So having these boardwalks down here in the Jameson Valley kind of, I guess, gives that opportunity to people who may not have otherwise had a chance to get, you know, into a space like this.
Yep.
And I think that's really special and really important.
It's using the actual scenic railway to get down here is also a really spectacular way to do it, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's exciting. And, like, I get excited every time still.
Yeah.
You get that little bit of, like, that childhood kind of feeling as you come down and you kind of teeter over that edge. It brings back that feeling of being a kid again, which is fun.
As you've been talking, I've spotted some dinosaur eggs. This is the first little...
Yep, these are a couple of eggs we've got here. We've got two little nests. So, you know, we're hoping some newborns will come out of that soon.
And there's some dinosaurs up the top that people get to see before they even come into Scenic World. But once they get down here, is that kind of scene setting part of the approach to encouraging them, getting them ready for what they're about to see down the bottom?
Yeah, I think we've got, you know, we try to evolve the event, I guess, year on year. So in the past we've had kind of different sections, you know, there's been a hatchery and a kind of fossil alley. Whereas this year we decided a kind of newer approach, which was to, kind of sprinkle things throughout. So that journey starts from the moment you step out of the car park, mm-hmm. and just builds those little bits of excitement as you come down. And then you see the little nest. And then as you turn a corner, you might spot, you know, a little herd of dinosaurs. And again, it's just building and building. Kind of each step of the way is what I tried to do with the layout this year.
So, Rachel, you're the event manager?
That's right, yeah.
Tell me what that involves.
So here at Scenic World, I work really closely with our production manager.
Mm-hmm.
And we essentially, you know, come up with the creative idea and the layout, and we put it together and we keep it going. So, you know, Dinosaur Valley has been happening. It's our fifth iteration of it. And so, yeah, as I said, we're always looking to breathe new life into the event. And this year we doubled our herd of dinos.
Wow.
And brought a whole lot of new kind of interactive elements in. And that was kind of our touch here. Yep. This year.
I love the way the boardwalk loops around these Parasaurolophus so that you get an opportunity to see them from all angles.
Right. This has always been, as soon as I started working here and I did this first walk, I was like, this has got to be
a
showpiece.
Right?
Yeah.
And
you want to have something. So originally I wanted to have some flying dinos here, but due to the fact that we are working in an actual living environment, you know, there's only certain spots we can actually use. So unfortunately here there wasn't enough trees, rigging points to kind of create that flock that I wanted, which means that this little kind of parent and babies kind of running up the hill was the next best option. But I'm actually really happy because it looks awesome.
Yeah, they look great.
Yeah.
And it gives people, as I say, the opportunity to circle around, to view them from all angles.
Yeah.
I noticed they were making some noise as well.
They do. They move and make noises. Yeah. Which is always exciting.
Parasaurs are such a great introduction to this part of the valley because they're so iconic.
That's right. And, you know, we have dino rangers that work here and kind of look after this space for us, I guess, down here, and it's really cool to hear them learning more and more about each dino, and so people really love them because of the fact that they use their heads as kind of like a horn, and so that's kind of been one of the things that people have really caught on to this year.
You mentioned those dino rangers. What's the background of the people that tend to do that job?
So it's like I think it's a really special kind of job here. It's a real mix of skills, I guess, that we look for. It is primarily like it's really a theatrical role. Mm-hmm. They're doing puppetry. They're doing scenarios, I guess. You know, we have them kind of climb off onto the valley boardwalk, and they'll get a big brush and they'll scrub the dinos down and clean them and get the kids really excited and interactive. So it's, they're really kind of taking on the persona of, you know, what we call the dino ranger. So it's a little bit of customer service, but really it's just like they're performing day in and day out down here. And it's really fun, especially it's removed from up top, so they don't have to deal with a lot of, you know, customer service issues or complaints. People are happy when they're down here.
They're seeing stuff.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's such a cool idea to have dinosaurs in a kind of natural environment, right? It's easy to imagine them being in this kind of space. Do you know the origins of that idea? What was the thinking there?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with that, is that we have this pretty special, like the Jameson Valley, this rainforest that is unique. You know, it's surrounded by bush, but we actually have an actual living rainforest right here. And so that idea of, you know, we don't want to just put things on here for the sake of it. It needs to fit and it needs to work. And so dinosaurs just fit so perfectly because we have, you know, ancient trees here, and we have you know, modern day dinosaurs, birds surrounding us. You know, hopefully we'll see a lyrebird on our walk around. And so it was those kinds of things that kind of really, I guess, inspired that idea of let's get dinosaurs in their natural habitat. So it's not so much you walk into a venue and you kind of loop around and then you leave. You're doing the walk, you're experiencing the valley, and then you spot a dinosaur and you're like, it feels real. It feels like they could have and did live here.
And that's the beauty of the Blue Mountains, right? You get this kind of sense of the Blue Mountains is so well known for its iconic flora and fauna. For those birds, you mentioned the lyrebirds, for the Wollemite pines, those ancient species that kind of do evoke, you know, a sense of awe, I guess, that we don't see in our
exactly, human world. Yeah, exactly.
There's a bit of noise happening here.
Yeah, we've really hit our dinosaur alley, I guess, here. This is where we're going to find most of our dinosaurs, our dino rangers. We've got some little newborns, so we've got some pretty impressive puppets that our team use to kind of, again, have that real interactive element. We've got a couple of lyrebirds here that look like they might be mating. Rotting around the back there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, got their feathers up, so...
Yeah.
It's mating season, so...
In the shot with...
It's a Minmi, yeah. I think Minmi's one of my faves. Yeah. Just beautiful, love an Australian dinosaur.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at them go. Oh, that's fun. Yeah, they're chasing. They are... They're just so fast as well, the lyrebirds.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
I don't know if you've got a decent photo then, but that's okay.
No, I've not seen them do this since I started.
Random question: have they started mimicking any of the animatronics?
I haven't heard it this year, but one of my colleagues said that there's one that kind of comes back year on year,
yeah.
Gets a bit. Kind of goes to kind of fight them a little bit, yeah, and started mimicking one of the sounds of the dinos.
That's wild. The way they move then, like, I don't know if you watched Apple's Prehistoric Planet, but in the first season of that, it had these, I think they were velociraptors, but they were small dromaeosaurids, going down a cliff face to hunt prey.
Okay.
And the way she was moving across there.
Well, and this is the thing, you see them and you're like, you can see, like, that is, you know, I imagine similar to what raptors will, you know, like, this is the size, so.
Yeah, that's the actual size.
Like, this is the size that they were, so. So we do try to have some Australian dinosaurs in our mix.
Yeah.
So we've got the Minmi, the Leolinosaurs. Australovenators.
So I'm not familiar with the Leolinosaurus.
Yeah, so Leolinosaurus, they are Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
So they're an Australian dinosaur.
Come down off Dinosaur Cove?
Yeah. And then up top we've got a Qantasaurus.
Okay.
Another Victoria, little tiny dinosaur. So yeah, that was also kind of, I think, one of the priorities was, let's make sure we at least have something that, you know... Yeah, they probably weren't here, but they were in our country.
Yeah.
God, these birds are going crazy. So, yeah, the Australovenators were our other Australian dinosaur.
Australovenator is actually my podcast slogan.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Just an outline of Australovenator on a yellow background. And I was thinking it's kind of like those animal ahead road signs.
Yeah. Well, look, our paleontologist dino rangers and some of our other just very keen dino loving dino rangers have pointed out that some of these dinosaurs are not to scale or but you know, we do our best.
Yeah, and you've got a blue, right? So you mix the lyrebirds.
That's right.
They're realistic.
That's right.
With the Jurassic Park. Spinosaurus,
yep. A beloved Spinosaurus. And this Sinoceratops is one of my faves. I quite like this one.
Feels lovely.
Yeah, and there's just something very, I think the size and the measured movements, I think, just are quite realistic.
Yeah.
And so this one especially, when we get a dinosaur ranger over there, it feels, it. That's why we love the dino rangers, because it brings it to life.
Yeah.
Like when you see someone standing right there, those dinosaurs become double the size than they are from here, because you're like, oh, okay. And then they're padding them, and that's kind of why we have that role, just to kind of have that next step of making it seem a bit more realistic.
What do you hope people take away from a visit to Dinosaur Valley?
I think one of the things with kids especially is, you know, the story that we have here is that we're a sanctuary for the dinosaurs. They're here, they're real, they're living with us today and now, and that we are caring for them, and that in... You know, we've got little things that they can do along the way to kind of become a junior ranger. Yeah. And in that, we want to kind of instill that love of animals. So whether it's a dinosaur or seeing a lyrebird or thinking about what other animals are here with us today, connecting that idea of, you know, birds being our modern day dinosaurs, and just how we can look after the environment so that we can protect animals and protect this beautiful space that we have the privilege, I guess, of being in. And then with adults and kids alike, it's just that sense of like imagination, play, you know. We want it to feel real. Doesn't matter how old you are, and be fun, you know, just something fun to do.
Yeah. And transporting adults back to that environment, adults often lose their sense of play, right? But if you can bring it back, that's fantastic.
Right, and if you walk past and, you know, there's a baby dino that you can pat, you kind of just get drawn back into it in that moment. And people want to give them a pat and they want to take a photo. Yep. That's kind of it for us.
Having the Australian dinosaurs, obviously you mentioned that already, and it's important to what you've tried to do here. I think Australian dinosaurs are very quite underappreciated.
Yeah, still, yeah.
Which is unfortunate. But, yeah, showcasing some of the species we have, some of those fantastic iconic species, is a really... really good approach.
That's definitely an important one, and as we kind of continue to grow and evolve, those are things we think about. We don't want this to be we want it to have some kind of, not necessarily educational, mm-hmm. but that feeling of learning. We've got our Quetzalcoatlus up here, and our pterodons, there's two of them. Yep. The Quetzalcoatlus isn't exactly a life size, but there it is.
so this is supposed to be...
That's supposed to be our Quetzal, yeah.
It's a pteranodon with its crest cut off.
And then we've got our two pteranodons. It really has taken me... the couple of months I've been working on this to get the names of the dinosaurs down pat. Some of them don't roll off the tongue.
So you said this was the sixth edition.
This is the fifth year, yeah.
And you think Scenic Worlds is getting behind this? They want to keep supporting it and growing?
I think so. I think the thing about dinosaurs is that, you know, kids are always going to grow into their dino phase, and that means that audience is always wanting dinosaurs.
Yep.
And I mean, you can see that from the market right now. There's lots of dino things out there happening.
They've never been more popular.
Yeah.
That peak and going down.
It's growing. And I think the thing is, because we can evolve the event year on year, we can have people come back next year or the year after while they're still interested in dinos, and it feels different. It's not like you're just walking into the same thing, you're spending money on the same thing. So if your kid's interested in dinosaurs for 4 years, you could come here for 4 years and feel like you're getting something different, but also that nostalgia each year.
And being seasonal as well, that does allow people the opportunity to come back every year. It's not something that will feel like a gross stale.
That's right. And same even for us, you know, you don't want something that's just here for years and years, year round. Yeah. You know, because you want the staff to feel excited. Yeah. You want, you know, adults to feel excited. So that's why that's kind of short run, but changing it makes a difference.
And tell me a bit more about the valley, the conservation aspects of what Scenic World does, introducing people to the environment. It's not an overt message, you know, you're not out here saying, look after this place.
Yeah.
But by showing people how important and beautiful it is.
Yeah.
I guess that's...
Yeah, and we've got some really interesting kind of new, I guess, for lack of a better word, products that are kind of being developed now to, I guess, look at that First Nations aspect of this land that we are currently living and working on, like Gundungurra land. So we've got some kind of tours with our Indigenous officer that can kind of take you through that kind of historical aspect, that which is super important. You know, this land goes back, you know, forever.
It's been occupied for 60,000 years, right?
Exactly.
It's millennia old.
Exactly. So I think that's a really great way that we're heading as a organization, is acknowledging that and looking at ways that we can kind of bring that in to our everyday. So those are really exciting. And then we do, there's obviously lots of school groups that come through here, and we have incredible guides. So different team members from different kind of departments, whether they're ride operators or ticket sellers, they do a bit of training, they get to know the valley, they get to know its history, and they take those kind of school groups or pre-organized tour groups around, which is also... I think a really important thing is it's not just here to, you know, get people in and out the door. We are trying to acknowledge and look after this this environment and space.
Yeah, absolutely. Even here on a weekday, there's lots of people wandering around and looking at everything. I think that's really pleasing, right? That you do get to introduce so many people to this, to the environment constantly.
And, you know, obviously we have a big international tourism market, but things like Dinosaur Valley, you know, some of the reason it is so successful is because it means that, you know, the greater Sydney people are coming back here again. So you don't just come here once when you're 12 and then never come again. You know, it gives that kind of reason to come back here, and then you're reminded of what is so special about Scenic World.
I've just noticed some fossils back there as well, embedded in the...
That's right, yeah.
Do they stay there, or are they part of Dinosaur Valley as well?
They are part of Dinosaur Valley. We've got kind of scattered around. We've got eggs, we've got bones, and we've got fossils.
Yep.
And that's, again, all part of that storytelling of Dinosaur Valley.
That it's not just... there's a whole ecosystem, right? A whole, whole life.
Exactly. Cycle exactly.
That exists here. Yeah.
And it also just builds that fun and excitement of like, oh, there's a giant dinosaur bone right there. And makes it feel like all that more realistic.
So you said you had school groups come through a lot. Local schools, or do you get people from further afield?
We do, you know, primarily local schools, but there is a venue across the road where people can kind of stay.
Okay.
School groups, so they tend to stay there and then, like, for school camp, and then come over and visit us.
Yep. This is one of the ranger activation points for the kids to have a look at.
That's right.
So we've got some fossils embedded in the ground. So we've got some Auslan interpretations and signage here as well, which is really nice for the words for dinosaur, extinct, herbivore, carnivore, and then various taxa as well.
Yeah, so again, this is part of our always evolving kind of idea, is... how can we have some different touch points along the journey that aren't necessarily just more dinosaurs, which is always awesome, but and how can we create that inclusive environment, and you know, the I guess little moments of joy of walking past, seeing a family standing here practicing their Auslan words. You know, if they take one thing away from this and then they remember that Auslan word for T-Rex, you know, great. We've done something good in that kind of experience. Enough. And again, here's another one of our kind of interactive touch points. Yep. Little I Spy game. Try and find the things out there in the valley.
So, essentially what's happening here is an approach to what might be called informal science education, right?
Yeah.
People come here for the attraction, they think they're going to see dinosaurs, and they do, and they're going to see this valley, which is fantastic. But they're also going to get, along the way, they're going to read some signage, they're going to see the eggs, they're going to see the fossils, and learn things by osmosis.
Exactly, almost. Exactly.
And for kids, if you can get them to learn without knowing they're learning, that's fantastic.
Exactly. And exactly, if they remember one thing out of their whole day, you know, that's awesome. And I guess it also just gives parents that opportunity to kind of, you know, acknowledge their child's interests, take them somewhere that's interesting to both of them maybe as well. So Psittacosaurus is affectionately known as Pistachio amongst
just
this one particularly. We've got kind of our affectionate names for the dinosaurs. You know, when you're trying to tell an electrician to go down and check the power source and you tell them to look at Psittacosaurus and they have no idea what you're talking about, we had to come up with some code names. So this particular fossil, it was kind of a last minute addition, and it turned out really awesome. And this is the most commonly asked, but that one's actually real, right? That's a real fossil. Which shows me that we've done something right then.
The immersiveness of that, the way it's played out, you know, it does look like it.
So original, it's actually a standing, it's built to be on a frame, and it was broken. So the company that we got it from, you know, said, oh, maybe you can try it just spread out in the forest. And originally they tried it lying on its side and it just did not work. Yeah. And so this splayed out, you know, we kind of imagine it kind of just leant forward and that was it for it.
Myosaurus, mother lizard.
Yes.
With her
babies, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's all from me here at Dinosaur Valley, otherwise known as Jemison Valley, in the fantastic Blue Mountains. Thanks so much to Scenic World and all of their staff for hosting this episode of Fossils and Fiction. Thank you for listening to this episode of Fossils and Fiction. We're always looking for more paleo stories to tell and welcome your suggestions through our social channels. You can also send voice notes via Spotify or social media. Podcast theme music is Sonora by Quincas Morea via the YouTube Audio Library. Show notes are available on the website, fossilsfiction.co. Please subscribe and rate the podcast on your preferred podcasting platform.